Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in chapter 2 of Ruth. I'm going to cover the first 23 verses, and we will entitle this chapter, Ruth Meets Boaz. Our context is this. In the first chapter of Ruth, we saw Naomi widowed in Moab, and how Ruth says, wherever you go, Naomi, I will follow you. Your God will be my God. I will die with you, and so forth. And so she comes back to Israel, but she's a widow too. Her mother-in-law's a widow. Ruth had married Mahlon, Naomi's son, in Moab, and Mahlon had died. And so Naomi and Ruth are poor widows. Bad situation to be in. No job market in ancient Israel for poor widows. And to boot, Ruth was a foreigner, a Moabitess. So we start down in Ruth chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech. Elimelech was Naomi's husband. And this kinsman's name was Boaz, and Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, her mother-in-law, please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. And she, that's Naomi, said to Ruth, go, my daughter. So she departed. Ruth departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now, the first question we need to ask is, why did not Naomi go to this kinsman of her husband, Boaz? Why didn't she go to Boaz and say, we need help? Here are some options. Maybe it was just modesty. She's a poor woman. Boaz is a wealthy man. Even though she might have been a kinsman of Boaz, still, it just was hard on her. It would be hard on her to do that. It's always hard for the rich to ask help, for the poor to help ask for help from the rich. And besides, she was not the kinsman redeemer per se. She was into Boaz's family by marriage. It was Elimelech, her husband, who was closely related to Boaz. So that might have explained it. Another question to ask is, why didn't Boaz offer to help Naomi? Well, here's some reasons why one would think he would help. First of all, he was a very generous and liberal man, as we'll see in this chapter. And second of all, he had knowledge that Ruth was coming. The whole town knew, as you recall from the last chapter. We read in Ruth chapter 2, verse 11, this chapter, Boaz replied to her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband Mahlon, Ruth, all of this has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know, came to the Israelites. A people that you did not previously know. She left her Moabitess father and Moabitess mother, her Moabite father and her Moabitess mother, and left the land of her birth. And Boaz knew all about that, and so he knew she was coming. He was generous. Why did he offer to help? Well, Jai Gill suggested maybe Boaz didn't realize how poor Naomi and Ruth actually were. And I suggest this, I speculate this, maybe he didn't realize he was the closest kinsman redeemer. But at any rate, it wasn't through an offer of help from Boaz or a request from Naomi that the happy circumstance of Boaz's redemption of Naomi and Ruth from poverty actually happened. It was through the accidental/providential meeting of Ruth in Boaz's field as she went to glean to stay alive. Now, notice that Boaz is a man of great wealth, not just wealthy, but great wealth. Some people speculate that Boaz was a judge of Israel, maybe even Ibzan, the 11th judge, about whom nothing is mentioned. That's fancy speculation there. Who knows? The name Boaz means in him is strength. In him is strength. Perfect name for the perfect husband for Ruth. The name actually is the name of one of the pillars of Solomon's temple. Solomon had two pillars in the front of his temple, and the left pillar was named Boaz, 1 Kings 7:21. He, that Solomon, set up the pillars at the portico of the sanctuary. He set up the right pillar and named it Jachin. Then he set up the left pillar and named it Boaz. In him is strength. In that pillar is strength. Now, who was Boaz's mother? She's pretty famous. His mother was Rahab, the famous harlot of Jericho. We read in the genealogy in Matthew 1, verse 5, Salmon was the father of Boaz by Rahab. And I'm assuming that's the direct father. Of course, there's always the possibility it could be an ancestor, not necessarily a father. But I assume this is Salmon and Rahab had Boaz, and Boaz had Obed had Ruth. And Obed was the father of Jesse, and Jesse was the father of David, and David, of course, was the ancestor of the Messiah. So that means that in the line of the Messiah, we have Rahab the prostitute and Ruth the foreigner, the Moabitess. And, of course, commentators love to point out that that shows that God's plan for salvation was universal. There's universalism here. It's not just, when I say universalism, I don't mean every single person on the planet, but it means every group of people on the planet, not just the Jews. Now, notice in verse 2 that when Ruth goes to see or goes to ask Naomi to go glean because they need food, she says, Naomi, please let me go to the field. Notice how polite she is and how obedient she is. She wants to ask permission first before she goes. This is her mother-in-law now. Reminds me of that song by Ernie Cado where most mother-in-laws are not so pleasant. Mother-in-law, mother-in-law, Satan should be her name. Mother-in-law, mother-in-law, 'cause to me they're about the same. Well, that's unfortunately how many mothers-in-law are, but not here. Ruth is totally devoted to Naomi and totally obedient to her. She wants to go glean in the field. Now, that's the law of gleaning we see in Deuteronomy 24, 19, and 20. The Israelites are told this, when you reap your harvest in your field and have forgotten a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the alien, for the orphan, and for the widow. And of course, we're talking about widows here, so they get to glean legally according to Deuteronomy 24. Now, that gleaning means just getting forgotten sheaves that are in the field. Now, I don't know why a farmer would forget to bring his sheaf of grain. I guess he's taking it to the barn and just forgets it. Verse 20 of Deuteronomy 24 says this, when you beat your olive tree, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the alien, for the orphan, and for the widow. So you're not supposed to clean out your olive tree with all the olives. You're supposed to leave some for the poor. And more relevant to us here is Leviticus 19:9. Now, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap to the very corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. Well, the poor person could cut the grains in the corners of the field, and also gleanings means any grain that's dropped in the process of making sheaves, the grain that's dropped, the poor people could pick up. The NIV Study Bible says this was a sort of welfare system for the poor, and that note also continues to say that what was left for the poor was meager at best. So the poor didn't get a lot, but they got enough to stay alive, and that's what's important. Now, in verse 2, Ruth asked Naomi if she can go glean after one in whose sight I may find favor. Now, she's not referring to Boaz there. She is referring to an owner who would recognize the Levitical right to glean. Well, she's got to ask. In other words, apparently this right was not automatic. Adam Clark says some owners of fields would not recognize the law because some owners of fields would unrighteously refuse to obey the law. So she has to go ask somebody, will you let me glean? Clark also has an idea, too, that the liberty to glean behind the reapers was not a right that could be claimed, that the law didn't allow that. In other words, as soon as they reaped and dropped some grain, you could immediately pounce on the fallen grain and grab it. The idea is that normal gleaning was after the sheaves were put together and tied together, that anything that fell down on the ground in the process of making the sheaves could be claimed. In other words, not behind the reapers, but with the sheaf makers. Well, that's a little technical for me, a little legalistic. I suspect that the real reason is a lot of people just didn't want poor people gleaning in their fields, and so they said, to heck with the law. We don't care what the law says. But at any rate, she's got to go ask favor of somebody. And verse 3 says, she departed, went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. That's Naomi's deceased husband. Happened to. Well, from her point of view, it was happened to. It was accidental. But from God's point of view, it was providential because he wanted her to marry Boaz. We go now to Ruth chapter 2, verses 4 through 7. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, may the Lord be with you. And they said to him, may the Lord bless you. Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, the overseer in other words, whose young woman is this? The servant in charge of the reapers replied, she is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab. Remember, in the last chapter, the whole city was talking about it, so everybody knows who this is. And she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. Thus she came and has remained from the morning until now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while. Now, verse 4 shows that Boaz is a good businessman. He comes from the city, Bethlehem, out to the fields on the outskirts of Bethlehem, and he says to the reapers, may the Lord be with you. He didn't come out there and say, you blankety-bank lazy SOBs, get to work. No, he didn't do that. He treats his workers kindly. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. A good businessman will treat his workers kindly. I just saw the story yesterday. A CEO on Zoom had all of his workers on a Zoom call internationally as well as in America and fired 900 of them. And then the board of directors of his company then fired him or put him on leave or chastised him. No, you got to treat your workers kindly. If you got to lay them off, fine, but do it kindly. Now, note the good results of this kind greeting. May the Lord be with you. How did they respond? May the Lord bless you, Boaz. So Boaz is going to where his workers are to see if everything is okay. This is what John Gill says about it. To see how his workmen went on and performed their service and to encourage them in it by his presence and by his courteous language and behavior and to see what provisions were wanting, that he might take care and give orders for the sending of them, it being now near noon, as it may be supposed. And though he was a man of great wealth, he did not think it below him to go into his field and look after his servants, which was highly commendable in him, and which showed his diligence and industry, as well as his humility. I remember I was teaching management when I was teaching college, business administration, and teaching management, and this was years ago. Somebody had an interesting phrase, management by walking around, MBWA, management by walking around, going out and seeing what the workers are doing and putting yourself in their shoes and listening to their complaints and their problems and figuring out how you can help them. Well, that's apparently what Boaz was doing, MBWA, checking out his fields. First thing he says, he sees this young woman there. Now, of course, we don't know what Ruth looked like, but since many movies have been made about her, and we can assume she's a beautiful young woman there, he says, whose young woman is this? What does he mean by whose? He could mean who's her owner. She says, is she a slave? Whose family does she belong to? Whose daughter is she? Whose wife is she? Whose is she? Now, if she's asking whose wife is she, that might indicate that Boaz had some romantic inclinations, a little bit at love at first sight. Well, if you go make a movie, I guess you can do that, but I don't think he's got any romantic inclinations at this point. Remember, she's a poor agricultural laborer. He's a rich guy. He's probably not thinking romance at all, in my humble opinion. Maybe he's saying, whose young woman is this? Whose nation does she belong to? Or which nation does she belong to? Maybe her dress was different from the other Israelite women. Speculation. I don't know. But he's just curious about her. Now, here's a little problem we need to deal with. Boaz must have heard the story about Ruth and Naomi coming back from Moab, but then he looks at her and he doesn't recognize her. He doesn't recognize her even though he knew all about her story. In the last chapter, verse 19, chapter 1, so they both went until they came to Bethlehem. That's Naomi and Ruth. And when they, Naomi and Ruth, had come to Bethlehem, all the city was stirred because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? The women of Bethlehem said, is this Naomi? So they all knew about it. In fact, we see later on in Ruth 2, where we are now in verses 11 and 12, Boaz replied to Ruth, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me. And how you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. So, that means Boaz already knew about her, but he probably just didn't recognize her. Or maybe he did recognize her, but he wanted to confirm for sure that it was really her. Or maybe he had seen her before when they had come back from Moab, but he had forgotten her. He had seen her, but forgotten what she looked like. That's John Gill's speculation. But at any rate, whether he was wanting confirmation or wanting first-hand knowledge of who this woman was, he asked. So when the overseer told Boaz who Ruth was, and then he's reporting Ruth's words to Boaz, Ruth had said this to the overseer, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. Notice how polite she is. And then the overseer says in verse 7, thus she came and has remained from the morning until now, and I'm assuming it's midday. She's been sitting in the house for a little while. Now, that word house has caused commentators a lot of constipation because you can't figure out how in the world she went out to glean and she ended up in a house. Well, whose house would that be? A farmhouse nearby, maybe? Naomi's house? Boy, no. The answer to that is it was a field shelter where workers took their meals and got out of the heat. And that's where she was, I'm sure. There's a question here. When did she do this? She apparently had started gleaning in the morning and it had gotten midday, gotten hot. And so she was taking a break in the shelter out of the sun. Now, so that means she already started gleaning, which means she had asked permission of the overseer, not Boaz, as Colin Delitzsch say. And I guess the overseer is saying to Boaz, this is what happened. I let her glean. Is that okay with you, boss? And of course it was. Now, one point I forgot to mention back in verse 4, Boaz comes from Bethlehem, said to the reapers, may the Lord be with you. And they replied, may the Lord bless you. And it's interesting, these old commentators back in the 1800s, here's what they say about that. Adam Clark says this, quote, can a pious mind read these godly salutations without wishing for a return of those simple primitive times? Well, if Adam Clark thought it was bad in the 1800s, think about what it's like in the 2100s. In the 2100s, the workers would look at Boaz and say, hey, boomer, things have changed. Here's what Jameson Foster Brown said, quote, this nice polite salutation, quote, strongly indicates the state of religious feeling among the rural population of Israel at that time, as well as the artless, happy, and unsuspecting simplicity which characterized the manners of the people. The same patriarchal style of speaking is still preserved in the East. Well, I would like to say this, that everybody always idolizes the past. I've got a big streak of that in me, too. Clark says, a return of those simple primitive times. Yeah, simple primitive times. What was it, a 10-year famine? These two women are starving to death? Yeah, simple and primitive, all right. But I guess if you're not talking about finances, but you're talking about manners, yeah, I suspect the manners were pretty good compared to the way they are now. And notice it's may the Lord, may Yahweh bless you, not how's it going, bud? Big difference. We go now to Ruth, chapter 2, verses 8 and 9. Then Boaz said to Ruth, listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw. Now here we see Boaz giving Ruth the legal right to, one, glean in a field, but also even beyond that, protection from physical or sexual harassment, two, and three, water to drink, the same water that his servants were drinking. And remember, water back then was a big deal. There was no running water. So in verse 8, Boaz says, listen carefully, my daughter. Apparently Boaz was a good deal older than Ruth. Reminds me of all these YouTube videos that I don't watch, but they keep popping up on my algorithm. Why, some woman saying this, why I love older men. I don't know why young women like older men, but Ruth certainly liked this older man, Boaz. Now, Boaz tells Ruth, do not go to glean in another field. Stay here. Some people have speculated that apparently Boaz had taken a liking to Ruth of some sort, maybe not romantic liking, but, you know, I like this girl. Let's let her stay here. He was very kind to her, but I don't think it's necessarily romantic. And why would Boaz think that Ruth might want to go to another field? Well, as John Gill suggests, a gleaner like Ruth might think she was being too troublesome to hang around one field, so she might go around looking for greener pastures, so to speak. Boaz says, you can stay here with my maids. That means his female servants. Well, why were female servants there? Well, there's a couple of options. They could be there to glean. In other words, they're actually not servants, but they're maids. They're young women. They're poor girls that Boaz was allowing to glean, maybe. But more likely, option number two, they were girls, servant girls who were gathering the wheat that was cut in order to bind the cut wheat into sheaves. Gill and Clark suggests that. Option number three, they were not only binding grain into sheaves, but they were reaping, cutting the sheaves as well, along with the men. John Gill says it was very probably customary in those times for women to reap. Jameson Frosted Brown goes even further. He says the women reaped the barley and the men tied the sheaves. I find that hard to believe, quite frankly, but whatever it was, the maids were doing something, and Boaz says, you are right in there with them. They're my servants, and I believe it was, sir. I don't believe it was fellow poor girls. I believe it's servants of Boaz, and he's saying, hey, you are just as privileged as they are. In fact, you can have the same water that I'm giving my servants to drink, the men as well as the women. You can have their water. And in verse 9, he says, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. And he's talking about his male servants. And he's talking about either sexual or physical harassment that is not being allowed on the part of Boaz's servants. How do I know that? Well, the Holman Christian Study Bible says this. In verse 9, when it says, I have commanded the servants not to touch you, the note to verse 9 says, either sexual or physical harassment. Now, sexual harassment was a definite possibility, especially in Ruth's case. She is a foreigner. She was poor. And she had no male relative to protect her. No brother. And, of course, her husband was dead. And her father-in-law was dead also. So she was in a very vulnerable situation. Naomi recognized that too, because after she heard the news about Boaz in verse 22, which we'll get to in a minute, Naomi said to Ruth, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids so that others do not fall upon you in another field. In other words, if you're out there with all the women's servants, nobody's going to sexually harass a bunch of women that are together. In numbers, there is safety. Now, this offering of a drink of water for the servants that Ruth is going to share in, a kind master would let gleaners drink from the jars provided to the reapers. And this proves that Boaz was a kind boss. We go now to Ruth 2, verses 10 through 13. She, that's Ruth, bowed with her face to the ground and said to him, why are you so kind to notice me, although I am a foreigner? Boaz answered her, everything you have done for your mother-in-law since your husband's death has been fully reported to me. How you left your father and mother and the land of your birth, and how you came to a people you didn't previously know. May the Lord reward you for what you have done, and may you receive a full reward from the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge. So that's why he's being kind to her. He recognized Ruth's character. Again, not her beauty. We don't even know whether Ruth was beautiful or not, but he didn't recognize her beauty. He recognized her character. A word of warning for young men who make their choices for marriage based only on one criteria, is she pretty or not? Oh my gosh. Verse 13, Ruth 2. My lord, she, Ruth, said, you have been so kind to me, for you have comforted and encouraged your slave. She's talking about herself, your slave, being a little bit hyperbolical. That's the way they did things. They always called each other, called people they were addressing, your servant or your slave. Although I, Ruth, am not like one of your female servants. Now in verse 10, she bowed with her face to the ground to Boaz. That shows she was deeply humble, although you could say that was a custom. Poor people would always, or inferiors would always bow to superiors. Well, whether it was a custom or whether it was a spontaneous burst of emotion, she was being humble. And Boaz says, hey, may the Lord reward you for what you've done. What had Ruth done? Well, it could be her respect that she paid to her deceased husband, Mahlon. I don't know how Boaz would know about that, but some people speculate that. The other option is that the thing that she had done that elicited so much praise from Boaz was Ruth's affectionate sentiment shown to her mother-in-law. I will go with you where you go. I will follow you. Your God will be my God, and I will die with you. The word had gotten around. Her reputation preceded her. Now, at the end of verse 12, we read this. Boaz is talking to Ruth. He says, the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge. Now, I think Boaz got it right. She was not really coming to look for a husband. She came looking for God. The husband was a collateral benefit. Now, I realize that's reading between the lines. A lot of people love to talk about how godly Ruth was. I hope that's true. I hope she wasn't just looking for money for a husband. I hope she was looking for Yahweh. Sometimes it's hard to distinguish your motives in situations like this, because when you look for God, when you seek for God, he loves to bless you, and pretty soon you're chasing the blessings instead of the God who gives the blessings. So I don't know, but she did leave the land of Moab, the land of her gods, as it says in the previous chapter, and she came to Israel, the land whose God was Yahweh, the true God. Now in the last part of verse 13, Ruth says, Boy, as you comforted me, although I am not like one of your female servants. What she's saying is, I'm lower than your female slaves. Servants mean slaves. I am lower. I guess it means slaves. Maybe not necessarily. Maybe they hired. But Ruth is saying, I'm lower than your servants. I'm lower than your slaves, if they are slaves. I am a nothing burger. She's extremely humble here. We go now to Ruth chapter 2, verses 14 through 16. At mealtime, and this is in the middle of the day, remember they're in this field shed, hiding out from the sun. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar." So now Ruth has gotten grain, barley grain from gleaning. She's gotten protection from sexual and physical harassment. She's gotten the same water that the workers get to drink, and now she gets to eat a meal with the big boss in the shade of that shelter. So Boaz is still being really kind to her. Dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. Eat of the bread. Again, this is dinner time in the mid-afternoon, middle of the day, around noon or so. Eat of the bread, dip it in the vinegar. Vinegar was used for cooling and refreshment in the heat of the summer. Now, that's what John Gill says. The text doesn't say that. It just says the bread's put in the vinegar. And you say, well, that'll taste good. I imagine it would taste good, bread and vinegar. But cooling and refreshment, that's interesting, because when I was in China, they started selling cold vinegar drinks that were carbonated. And I looked at that and I said, only in China can you find vinegar to drink to quench your thirst. But there was not much else in the matter of drinks that we could find over there. So I bought one time. I said, it tastes like vinegar. It wasn't long before my wife and I were drinking those things daily. They really are. They're very cooling and refreshing. You just have to get over the fact that you're drinking vinegar, which no self-respecting American would ever do. So in verse 14, Ruth sat down beside the reapers. She's accorded equal status with the servants. She's not just a gleaner now. She's with the reapers. And he, that's Boaz, served her roasted grain. Now that grain was barley, because this was the time of the barley host, probably. It could be roast corn or roast wheat or something else that was saved. But remember, this is the barley harvest. The way we know it's the barley harvest is because the last verse in Ruth 1 says this. So Naomi came back from the land of Moab with her daughter-in-law Ruth, the Moabitess. They arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Now, assuming that not a lot of time had passed, it's still the barley harvest. The barley harvest is on the second day of Passover week, Feast of Unleavened Bread, 16th of Nisan. Passover was on the 14th. That was the first fruits of the barley harvest, and then, of course, the harvest went on after that. So we're talking about sometime in April/May, maybe the beginning of May somewhere. Now, the barley that she's eating here, again, might not have been the barley that they were reaping, but I bet it was. She ate, was satisfied, had some left, and that some left she carried home to Naomi. Verse 18, she, Ruth, took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out, this is this extra food, the leftovers, and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. And again, that was purposeful, because now Naomi says, wow, you got enough grain left over? You got leftovers? We're starving to death and you got leftovers? Who gave this to you? Who gave you this opportunity? Now, verse 15 says this, when she rose, that's when Ruth rose to clean. That means meal's over, time to go back to work. Boaz commanded his servants, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. What does that mean, let her glean even among the sheaves? Well, the pulpit commentary gives an answer to that. That commentary says that crooked gleaners would think that this is the best place to glean because they could steal from the sheaves. The grain that was already tied up in a sheaf, you go over there and you pull it out of the sheave rather than pull it off the ground. Legally, you were allowed to pull it off the ground, but you're not supposed to steal it from the sheaves. And a dishonest person could do that. So Boaz is saying, well, let her go in there among the sheaves where a dishonest person might steal, because I know she's not going to do it, because she is honest as the day is long. Look at her character. Look what she did with her mother-in-law, came all the way back from Moab. So letting Ruth glean there among the sheaves shows Boaz's complete confidence in Ruth. Now, actually, Ruth had previously requested to glean among the sheaves. Ruth chapter 2, verse 7, and she, Ruth, said, this is what she had said to the overseers, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So the reapers would reap, and then the sheavers, I'm making up a word, they would get the grain together and make a sheath out of it, a sheave out of it. Is it a sheave or a sheath? A sheath, I guess. And these reapers would make the sheath, and then maybe the women would tie up the sheaf. And in the process of doing that, grain would fall to the ground, and then the gleaner could pick the grain off the ground. Well, that's the best place to glean, because there's going to be a lot of grain hit the ground because of the sheathing process. Whereas if you just glean in general, that means, yeah, some grain might fall here or there, but it's not going to be concentrated like it would be there. John Gill says that phrase, among the sheaves, points to a particular spot where the best barley would be, which comports with what I just said. This was a privilege. Usually no person could glean until the sheaves were bound. And, of course, if the sheaves were bound, that would give the people making the sheaves time to pick up any grain they might have left, and so there would be less on the ground. But Ruth got to glean while the sheathing process was going on, so she got to get more stuff, more grain. Here's what the pulpit commentary says, quote, "The space between the sheaves, as distinguished from the spaces outside their line, would probably be the part whither the maidens conveyed their collected armfuls, and where they bound them into sheaves. It would thus be the place where there would be the greatest number of waifs." Now, I don't know what a waif is, but I think what it means is dropped grain on the ground. To me, these little details is what makes it so fun to go through all these commentators and get the little details. It just makes the whole story stand out. You normally don't hear what I've just told you in the typical story about Ruth. It's all about moonlight and magnolias. We go now to Ruth 2, verses 17 through 18. "So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. She took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied." In verse 17, she beat out what she had gleaned. She beat out the grain before she carried the gleanings home. Why? Well, that would make it lighter to carry. She had to carry it all the way from the field back into the city. That's the city of Bethlehem. And so she gleaned all the way until the sun, till evening, whenever they quit gleaning, or quit reaping, as the sun set. She goes home. She took the gleaned barley. She also took and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied, her leftovers from her lunch that afternoon that she ate with Boaz. Now, some people say that it wasn't the leftovers. It was the gleaned barley that Ruth ate and gave Naomi the rest of. In other words, a different meal. They took some of that gleaned barley, had a meal. Ruth got satisfied and gave her leftovers to Naomi. Nah, that's not what it is. It's the leftovers from the meal with Boaz. We go now to Ruth chapter 2, verses 19 through 20. "Her mother-in-law," that's Ruth's mother-in-law Naomi, "then said to Ruth, where did you glean today and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed." Well, of course she's saying that. Look at all that grain. Gil says that was enough grain for 5 days, plus some leftovers. She's hungry. They were on the edge of starvation, the edge of poverty, and the edge of destitution. And by golly, this is looking good, Ruth. So may whoever took notice of you, that means by letting you glean in his field, may he be blessed. So she, that's Ruth, told her mother-in-law Naomi, with whom she had worked, and said, "The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and the dead." And again, Naomi said to her, "The man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives." Naomi's starting to think, ooh, kinsman redeemer. Kinsman redeemers are supposed to buy us out of our poverty. She's getting excited now, I'm sure. Now, verse 19, when Naomi asked Ruth, "Where did you glean today?" I'm sure she was wondering how in the world Ruth had managed to glean so much. So she's naturally curious. Now, when Naomi says, "May he who took notice of you be blessed," Gil speculates that Naomi might have already had an idea that it was Boaz. I don't know. I don't know how Gil thinks that, but she's certainly appreciative of whoever it was. Then Ruth says, "Yes, it was Boaz." And then Naomi says, "May he, Boaz, be blessed because of the kindness that Boaz has shown to the living and the dead." Well, he's shown kindness to Ruth and Naomi, the living. How has he shown kindness to the dead? Well, the dead is referring, Naomi is referring to her deceased husband Ahimelech, her deceased son Mahlon, Ruth's deceased husband, and Chilion, Ruth's sister Orpah's deceased husband. If I said Ahimelech, I meant to say Elimelech, Naomi's deceased husband. So God was good to them, but to the dead people, because God was taking care of their widows. Naomi tells Ruth, "The man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives," because there was another one. In fact, the other one was actually nearer than Boaz. Ruth 4:6. The closest relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself because I would jeopardize my own inheritance. Redeem it for yourself. You may have my right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it. The it there that's being redeemed is Naomi's family land that Elimelech used to own and got it sold off for debt. And the closest relative says, I can't redeem it. I guess he didn't have the finances to do it. So I'm passing the buck to the second closest relative, you, Boaz. Now, that phrase that's translated in the NASB as closest relative is usually translated different. The Hebrew is goel. The NASB note translates it as redeemers. He is one of our closest redeemers. The NIV says he is one of our kinsmen redeemers. The Holman Christian Study Bible says he is one of our family redeemers. I like kinsmen redeemers, so we'll go with the NIV. Now, what does a kinsman redeemer do? Just in summary here, one, he buys back family land sold in a crisis, like Elimelech's land. Two, he buys back enslaved relatives who sold not only their land for debts, but their bodies, their selves, for debt. So a kinsman redeemer would buy a enslaved to debt relative out of their slavery. Number three, a kinsman redeemer would provide an heir for a dead brother. That's like the Levirate marriage. One brother dies, the other brother marries the dead brother's surviving wife to carry on the dead brother's family name. Kinsman redeemers would do that. That's a special kind of kinsman redeemer, the Levirate brother situation. The number four purpose of a kinsman redeemer is to avenge the killing of a relative. If somebody killed your cousin and you're the closest kinsman redeemer, well, then you've got to go track down the murderer and do him in. And the fifth thing a kinsman redeemer would do is to care for relatives who were in difficult financial circumstances. So let's look at the scripture that says all that. This is an important institution in the Old Testament economy, in the Old Testament society. So we'll look at it some. Buying back family land in a crisis, just like we see here, or we'll see in chapter 4, when Boaz buys back Elimelech's land, and so Elimelech's land is back in the family, back in the tribe. Leviticus 25:25, if a fellow countryman of yours becomes so poor he has to sell part of his property, then his kinsman redeemer is to come and buy back what his relative has sold. All right, the second thing that a kinsman redeemer would do is to buy back enslaved relatives. We see that in the same chapter in Leviticus, chapter 25, verses 47 through 49. Now, if the means of a stranger or of a sojourner with you become sufficient, and a countryman of yours becomes so poor with regard to him as to sell himself to a stranger who is sojourning with you, or to the descendants of a stranger's family, then he shall have redemption right after he has been sold. One of his brothers may redeem him, or his uncle's son may redeem him, or one of his blood relatives from his family may redeem him, or if he prospers, he may redeem himself. So the kinsman redeemer buys somebody out of slavery. I'm not going to read the law of Levirate marriage. It's pretty well known. Got two brothers. One brother dies. His surviving widow then marries the surviving brother. And they live happily ever after and provide offspring and continue the family name of the dead brother. The fourth thing, avenging the killing of a relative, this is the blood avenger, which is a kinsman avenger who's doing justice because they didn't have police back then. Numbers 35:19 through 21, the blood avenger himself shall put the murderer to death. I like that name, the blood avenger. That's the NASB translation. It's repeated in verse 21, Numbers 35, the blood avenger shall put the murderer to death. All right. The fifth function of the kinsman redeemer to care for relatives in difficult circumstances, we see that in Jeremiah 32, verses 6 through 8. The difficult circumstances, of course, was Jerusalem was under siege by Babylon and people were in a famine situation. And Jeremiah said, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, behold, Hanamel, the son of Shallum, your uncle, is coming to you, saying, buy for yourself my field, which is Anathoth, for you have the right of redemption to buy it. Then Hanamel, my uncle's son, came to Jeremiah in the court of the guard, according to the word of the Lord, and said to me, buy my field, please, that is at Anathoth. Anathoth is right north of Jerusalem, which is in the land of Benjamin, for you have the right of possession, and the redemption is yours. Buy it for yourself. So Hanamel was in debt. He needed to sell his field to get out of debt, and so the kinsman redeemer came in and bought it. So, with all that legal precedent, no wonder Naomi was excited to think that this man of great wealth, not just wealth now, but great wealth, that this man was a kinsman redeemer. Of course, there's somebody that's closer, unfortunately, but at least he's close, Boaz is. We go down to Ruth, chapter 2, verses 21 through 23. Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "Furthermore, he," that's Boaz, "said to me, 'Ruth, you should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest.' Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, 'It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids, so that others do not fall upon you in another field.' So she," that's Ruth, "stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law." Now Ruth is reporting Boaz's words to Naomi and says that Boaz had said, "Ruth, you should stay close to my servants," the Septuagint has "close to my maidens." Well, we see that Boaz told Ruth to stay close to the maidens, and then we said, and then we'll see that Naomi said, "Yep, you stay close to the maidens," and then we'll see in another verse that Ruth stayed close to the maidens. In Ruth 2, verse 8, Boaz says to Ruth, "Stay here with my maids." In Ruth 2, 22, Naomi says to Ruth, "It's good that you go out with the maids." And then in verse 23, in chapter 2, where we are now, the text says that Ruth stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean. So she was protected with all of Boaz's female servants. And Boaz had told Ruth to stay close to those maidens, those female servants, until they, the maids, have finished all the harvest. Now, what does that mean? All the barley harvest? I would think so. As I said earlier, that's in April and May. Happens right after Pentecost, first fruits of the barley harvest. It's Nisan 16, Pentecost is Nisan 14, in our current April/May. And so I think that that's what Boaz is saying. Stay close until the barley harvest is over. Well, it could be that that's what Boaz is saying. But on the other hand, Ruth ends up staying beyond the barley harvest all the way to the wheat harvest, which is about 7 weeks later. Pentecost, remember, after the barley harvest, you got 7 weeks. That's 49 days. And the 50th day is the 50th day of Pentecost, the Feast of Weeks, Feast of Pentecost. In May or June, I'm sure you remember all that from all those Jewish festivals we went over in the Pentateuch. So that means for 7 weeks, 49 days or so, well, the Feast of Weeks actually is the offering of the first fruits on day 49. But then the harvest went on after that sometime into the summer, into June. So let's put it this way, at least 7 weeks, she's gleaning, working away, and they're staying alive. And she lived with her mother-in-law. Every night after Ruth was through gleaning, she'd go back to Naomi's house as we go for those 7 weeks between barley and wheat harvest. Now, Naomi says in verse 22, stay with Boaz's maids, as I've already said. Naomi says, why do I want you to do that? So that others do not fall upon you in another field. What does fall upon you? That's the main reason that Naomi told Ruth to stick by. She didn't want Ruth to get fallen upon. And the options there is she didn't want Ruth to be sexually molested, or she didn't want Ruth to be physically molested. In Ruth 2:9, we've already read that. Boaz told his servants not to touch you, Ruth. Well, why would he tell his servants that? It means don't sexually harm this young woman. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with Ruth chapter 2. We are now prepared to go to Ruth chapter 3 in our next audio. Ruth and Boaz at the threshing floor. Romance is kindled, finally. I guess it's romance. We'll see you in our next audio. I hope you enjoyed this one.